Welcome to the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week. I'm your host, Hank Sanders. Each week, we tackle a different issue that's uniquely Portland. So tune in every Saturday to hear a new episode complete with interviews and editorial that helps explain our city. From Portland's leading paper comes a brand new way to engage with the news, sports, arts, and culture. Stick around. Welcome to the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week. I'm your host, Hank Sanders. Today is June 19th, and we have the 25th episode of the show for you. I promised you last week that we were going to share a litany of interviews with very special guests over the next few weeks, and we deliver again for you. Last week, we were joined by the mayor of Portland, Ted Wheeler. If you haven't listened to that episode, stop what you're doing, go back, give that a listen, because it's a very interesting, fun, spirited conversation. But this week, we are joined by Mingus Maps, a city commissioner in Portland. And in Portland, city commissioners share a lot of responsibility. They share a lot of power and decision-making responsibilities in the city. Every single day, they're making decisions that affect all of our lives on a daily basis. And Maps is just a few months removed from his election that got him into this role, where he defeated incumbent Chloe U. Daly in November. I had a lot of questions for this new city commission member, and I talked to him about a variety of things. We talk about the $5.7 billion budget he and his colleagues just passed. We talk about his experiences as a black man and a leader in the community, and he defends his vote to kill the Portland Street Response project, which is something that was discussed a lot in the media as being a controversial vote, but he defends that, so we discussed that topic. And if you don't care about any of those topics, that's totally cool too. We talk about other things. I ask him other questions. It's a 15-minute interview. So with no further ado, let's run the tapes and please enjoy our discussion with the city commissioner, Mingus Maps. So when Willamette Week did our endorsement meetings, we found that there were two where there were, you know, some more tension than others. And that was with the mayoral race and your race with against Chloe U. Daly. And you've been upfront about that. When you got into office, did you think, oh, wow, this was, you know, my predecessor left a mess? Or were you thinking, maybe I didn't get in, give this person enough credit? She did a fine job.
I've always had, I knew Commissioner U. Daly quite well. I both worked for her in one of her bureaus. So I got to interact with her staff. I understood what her vision was. It was never an issue of me not liking U. Daly. Indeed, I think that experience of working in her bureaus is one of the things that inspired me to run for office. She's a very relatable person, single parent. I'm a single parent. So there was none of that. One of U. Daly's challenges in this job is that, you take a lot of criticism no matter what you do, and how you respond to that is quite challenging. And frankly, everyone on city council works 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. And in the background, you have people, very upset with you. So it's emotionally challenging, that's for sure. And I think that if you just kind of open the headlines and see that the commissioner was, grumpy today, sometimes I always had some context for that, but I also just really, now that I'm here, I just see how, what an emotionally demanding job it is. So that's kind of, and I always had some sympathy for her for that. I certainly have more sympathy for her with that today than I did even 6 months ago.
One thing that was popular when people were talking about how to reform police so that there are less police shootings was this idea of increasing the amount of medical health professionals that go out to certain calls instead of armed police officers. And yet you voted no on the expansion of the police street response, and it ended up not getting passed. So I want to know why.
Sure. Well, I think one of the things that happened around that debate is that it got, it was misframed in the public and frankly in the press. Portland Street Response really, I think, is the future of emergency response here in Portland. It's a complicated complicated system, though, and people don't really appreciate that. What actually happened during the budget crisis was there's this proposal, or the budget debates, was this proposal to rapidly expand the rate at which we roll out Portland Street Response. And I want to do that, too. I want to get Portland Street Response into every neighborhood as quickly as possible. But implementation really matters. You know, in order for Portland Street Response to work, and for those of you who haven't been following this closely, Portland Street Response is basically a new arm of our emergency response system. So when you see someone who is having a mental health crisis in public, our current practice is to send out a cop to respond to that call. Portland Street Response is about sending out mental health workers and people who are trained in crisis de-escalation to go and help that person and connect them to the services that they need. Now, one of the things that we're working on during this implementation phase is to figure out how all these pieces come together. You know, if we send out mental health workers to intervene with someone who's having a crisis, but there's not, you know, a mental health bed for that person to go to, we haven't necessarily done a whole lot. And one of the things we're doing in this pilot phase is developing those kind of supportive relationships so that, you know, number one, we, you know, I'm the commissioner in charge of 911. We're still working out our protocols on what kind of calls do we send Portland Street Response on. And the risk here is quite, you know, quite high. If we send out Portland Street Response to a situation where someone has a gun and our unarmed employees wind up getting shot, you know, that's kind of a failure of public policy. And I want to reassure every Portlander and everyone across America who's looking at this experiment that, you know, Portland will get this right. We're moving at, you know, we're moving at a breakneck pace, that's for sure, but it's never going to move as quickly as people want. But this is the future and we will get there together.
You just released your $6 billion, almost $5.7 billion budget. What is your favorite thing in the budget? And what is something that if you had all supreme power, you would say, no, this doesn't deserve to be in our budget?
Oh, you know, there's so many important things in the budget that I'm really proud of. Some very big and world-changing, like the new investments we're making in affordable housing. I'm really proud that we managed to both cut the police budget. At the same time, we're going to have even more cops on the street. That's just like efficiency and smart government. But there's my personal favorite, because it just speaks to my heart, is the they have a project to bring to build a new food cart pod on Ankeny Street. It's Ankeny West. An effort to activate a long neglected corner of Portland. Also, we have these food carts, which are for the most part operated by, you know, immigrants who got displaced by development downtown. The city of Portland promised years ago that we would make do right by those folks. It's been 3 or 4 years later and we haven't done it yet. But finally, we have this plan together where we'll actually get those folks into a new space. And it also fits into a larger vision of developing both sort of a culinary corridor throughout the city where people can go and kind of have really interesting dining experiences, and a green loop where people can walk or ride throughout the city. So I'm excited about those kind of forward-looking visions that actually will dramatically improve the quality of life here in the Portland.
Yeah, I heard a lot to love there. I do want to hear one thing that you think, I might have misheard you, but I do want to hear one thing that you're not a huge fan of in the budget.
If I could wave a wand, I would do a better job of making sure the city of Portland and Multnomah County spend their coordinate their investments in community more effectively. And you can kind of see that, you know, to place that into context, you can see, I think we've overcome this at this point. But for City Hall watchers, you might have seen the controversy and debates between the city and county around what do we lead with on homelessness? Do we build organized camps, or do we focus in on shelter first? Both approaches really matter. I think that we finally managed, because it's an important issue, to find a compromise that kind of optimizes the best outputs for, you know, for everybody. But that's like, you know, a good example of, you know, the kind of work that needs to be done. I can tell you, I don't really see any, you know, partly because this is a cut year for the city. So there's not a lot of fat. And one good thing about having lean years is it really doesn't give you the luxury of making bad fiscal choices.
So it's more like not one specific major thing. It's kind of like how the funds are allocated in general.
Yeah. And, you know, and this is also a remarkable moment because, you know, there's everyone's all hands on deck at the city, the county, the state, and the federal level about, you know, deeply committed to helping Portland recover. It's actually great. There's, you know, a significant amount of new dollars out there. I just worry and wonder if the federal government and the state government and the county government and the city government have sat down and really compared notes on where and how we're investing our dollars. I think there's plenty of opportunities for miscommunication and, frankly, duplication.
I'm glad that you brought up the food carts, because I think that it's a travesty that they're getting pushed. I think that, and obviously that happened before your time, obviously.
Yeah.
No comment, but no comment on that needed. But no, I that block downtown by that Target is just so iconic.
Yeah, I that's a shame, but don't, the good news is, you know, I've seen the plans, I've seen the drawings for what's coming in the future, and it's going to be really, it's going to be really great. It's going to be part of the one of the sparks that really helps Portland catch fire again. And it's also an opportunity to kind of think about the kind of city that we want. So this is going to be, this is a step towards, you know, getting people back in public again. You know, this is going to be connected to basically a giant bike loop. And this is just the one of many sort of, dead spots in the city that we're going to activate over the next coming months and years. So I love it because it's kind of forward looking.
Okay. Well, that's given me a little bit more hope, but if I don't like it, I'm going to call you up again.
All right. No, trust me. I rarely make promises, but I promise you, you're going to like it.
Okay. Sounds good. So when you were being interviewed by, I think it was K2 News, you made this comment that I want to talk to you about. And it was that, according to you, Black communities are over-policed and under-policed. Talk to me about what that means.
Sure. Well, I mean, the over-policing part is, I think, kind of transparent to most Portlanders. You know, we're deeply concerned about the disparities in arrest rates between people with brown skin and people with white skin. That's clearly a sign of, you know, frankly, let's just be frank here, of institutional racism, and we need to kind of drive that out of our government. But a thing that I think especially gets lost in the mainstream dialogue around policing is that, you know, African-Americans, you know, need basic public services too. And, you know, Latinos need basic public services too. And Asian-Americans need basic public services too. And, you know, those services include, you know, adequate police protection. Frankly, when I go out and visit communities of color, as often as I hear concern about police violence, I also hear concern about, like, the police not being there when you need them, when there's someone in your backyard or in your garage, you know, looking for cans, you hope. The fact that you don't feel comfortable sending your kids out at night or even in the evening because, you know, gun violence is everywhere. You know, and that's kind of, and frankly, the browner the community, the slower your police response times tend to be. That's what I was kind of talking about in terms of being under-policed. You know, we need to, and this is also true with, you know, it's true of police, but it's also true of roads. You know, if you want to find a brown community and then go take a look at you know, how many potholes there are in the streets. This is a structural problem where, you know, my people of color tend to get the worst public services. And one of the things I want to do when I'm in this job is to make sure that every Portlander gets good basic public services, regardless of the color of your skin.
When you ran for this office and talked to our staff and answered questions, you talked to other media, you really came out, you know, and strongly and said that, you know, with your experience as a single parent and being a person of color, wanting to talk about the issues that that we've talked about in this interview, have there been times, and if so, tell me one story of a time that that you experienced racial profiling.
Oh, racial profiling? Or certainly in my life, you can't be a black man in America without being racially profiled. You know, my entire youth, as I would walk down the streets, you know, people would lock their car doors and clutch their purses. I still have some personal anxiety about going into malls because as a younger person, when I would go into a mall, like I basically have my own security guard escort about 10 paces behind me. You know, I think maybe it was probably even your newspaper. I remember meeting a constituent during the course of the campaign to talk about, I think of all things, affordable housing, and, you know, a car full of folks drove by and yelled a racial slur at me. Certainly there have been times, one of the reasons why historically I don't drive a car that much is because if you're a black man in America, once you get in the car, you literally have fewer civil rights. You tend to get pulled over more often than you would if you were not a black person. And all of those things kind of, you know, shape me, have made me into the person I am. And, you know, I think there's some differences between, I think a deeper question is how do I respond to that? And I think every person responds to racism in a different way. I think because of just my unique makeup, I see that, and I try not to take it too personally when I see people kind of yell a racial slur at me or clutch their purse or the security guard pulls me over. What I see is, the fear in other people. And it's, and I see that, you know, that racial profiling hurts me, but I also see how it also is a symbol and a product of wounds in the majority culture. And as we move beyond racism, not only will my life be better and the life of my brown children will be better, but I think that the, will also help to wound some of the psychic wounds that, you know, frankly, our white neighbors in Portland carry within themselves.
On those days when I'm really alone, realize the voice I miss is my own. When did I forget how to hold my own head? Still can't understand.
Well, folks, that's our show. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Dive Podcast. Now, I know what you're thinking. Hank, there is no way that you can bring us another great guest next week. But read and weep. We totally can. So come back next week to find out who our next special guest is. We're doing this for a few more weeks. So if you like our discussions with special guests, powerful people in Portland, influential people, then stick around. Give us another shot next week to blow your minds. But in the meantime, keep reading Willamette Week. Guys, we put out another great cover story this week. We do it every week. So make sure to go check that out this week by Sophie Peel, a great friend of the show's. We've had her on. She's really awesome to talk to and really great work on her cover story. So go check that out for sure. And come back next week for our special guest, unnamed TBD. For you, of course, I know who it is, but I guess we'll just have to wait and see who it is when it goes live next week. Same place, same time on Saturday. You know the drill. See you then for Willamette Week. I'm Hank Sanders. Take care. Enjoy the heat. I hear we're coming. That's coming into Portland. So till then, take care. Bye now. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week. For more information on this podcast or the biggest stories in Portland, go to wweek.com and follow Willamette Week on all socials. We're doing some really cool things related to the podcast on our Instagram and Twitter. It includes giveaways, behind the scenes, etc. A lot of cool things coming your way, so give those a follow. Special thanks to our guests for joining us, and thank you to Aaron Mesh, Mark Zussman, and Brian Panganibon, as well as the entire Willamette Week family. Last but not least, thank you so much to Heather Witte and AmpMusic.co for the music that you hear on this podcast. For Willamette Week, I'm Hank Sanders. This has been the Dive Podcast.